Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And it is not Feedback Friday. As a matter of fact, we missed Feedback Friday just so we could get that Todd Callender Part 2 interview up. Because I think it was really kind of important to hear what he was talking about. And the reason why is because the oath of office is precisely what we are relying upon. So, in other words, if you find out that your public servants aren't taking an oath, they're not legally bound, then now you know why we have a problem. Because they believe that they're not accountable. And technically, they are committing treason. Because if you're serving in an office where the supreme law of the land demands that you must take an oath to serve in that office, and the state law actually demanded the same thing, and so you go through this charade that you seem to be taking an oath, but you're really not, because it's not legitimate. You don't have a notarized witness. It's not a certified document. Then, folks, we have a problem. And so this becomes another petition that we need to start driving forward. So obviously, somebody's got to create a petition for this. Maybe I can ask Todd. Maybe Todd would be happy to, because I think it's really a no-brainer. He has already got it in his brief, probably, as he lays out the legal argument. Because that's all petitions are. These are legal arguments that point to what is demanded by the Constitution, what should be happening as demanded by the Constitution, and what you're doing as a public servant isn't in compliance to that, and this is what you need to do to fix this, or this is what we're going to do because you're incapable or refusing to fix it, and so forth. So, anyway, I hope you enjoyed those interviews. I know I got some good feedback on them already. But the one thing I need to get into, because what we're going to do today is, well, let's just call this in the most humble way I can possibly say this, because I know I really kind of lecture. I get into like a professorial state of mind where, you know, I kind of maybe demand. This is how it has to be. It's very rigid and so forth. And I'm only trying to help you understand the framer's view. I didn't make this stuff up. So all I'm doing is supporting. It's kind of like, you know, when you actually have a preacher, if you've ever been to a worship meeting, what have you, where you actually go and receive, you know, scriptural guidance and, you know, preaching, we'll just call it that. And you really feel, you know, the spirit, because the preacher, the person that is pontificating, is really hitting the core of the scriptures, really hitting the core of what must be done. In other words, they're not being politically correct. They're really basically, I'll just say, they're recanting what the actual apostle said. They're basically echoing, you know, what the scriptures had said, what the apostle said, what Christ had said. And so those words really are profound, which is why they were written down. The ratification debates really are profound, which is why they were written down. Hopefully that makes sense. But anyway, so what we want to do is we want to cover a bunch of topics today. The first thing I want to kind of, you know, I'm not going to cover these in this order, but the first thing I want to mention I'm going to cover is how the courts have really made Americans lazy. And I want to expand on this and how it's really created an opportunity for a, you know, a market space to actually become very rich. That it became, it's kind of like how our medical system had really created this, I'll just say, this shift from serving people and healing and having that love of healing to a real money-making opportunity. And we see, and there's empirical data that actually proves these things. But anyway, we also want to hit on the label hate crime versus ideological crime. And what's the difference? Plus, I want to talk a little bit about my interview that I'm going to be playing tomorrow. So we're going to be putting off wrapping up the Assumption Act tomorrow for Wednesday. And then we'll dive in on Thursday, or maybe we'll dive. It depends on how long it takes us to get through the Assumption Act. But what I hope to do is actually, you know, get the Assumption Act and the Bank Act and the National Bank. We'll clarify all of that content. And then when we're done with that, we will dive into the cod fishery bounties, which should take up the body of the Wednesday, Thursday show. And then Friday, we'll go back to a Feedback Friday. Unless we get, I think it's Henry Rollins. I want to make sure I got that right. Henry Rollins, he's a Black Flag front man. He's very pragmatic. He seems to have I don't want to say an affinity for the Constitution, but he's a classic liberal, it seems like. And he wants, I think, rights protected. So I've reached out to Henry Rollins to actually see if he would come on, because he's actually said some really profound things. He's not necessarily a hardcore conservative. I think he's more of a hardcore constitutionalist, because he seems like a more of a hardcore liberal, a classical liberal. You know, I hear all the time how libertarians are the classical liberals. No, they're not. The libertarians are far more anarchists than they are classical liberals. Because Adam Smith was a classic liberal, and he basically would never have uttered the words taxation is theft. He understands pragmatically that we need to have government. People institute governments. And so we need to make sure that government has the necessary funding to do what it needs to do. Nobody should be compelled to work for free. Public servants shouldn't be working for free. So in other words, there's a cost for that. And there are very specific things that we want them to do, but we do not give them, you know, let's just say unbridled access to every facet of our lives. This is why we have enumerated constitutions and have very limited and defined governments. But anyway, we're going to get into the hate crimes and ideological crimes. And Harry the Greek, why his interview, hopefully we'll get to this because there's a lot of stuff I want to cover. But Harry the Greek, we're going to be interviewing him tomorrow. And he's exposing news that's happening all over the place. And that his website is News Others Miss. So when you type News Others Miss, just search for it in a search page and then go to the homepage, newsothersmiss.com, because you may land on, you know, somewhere in the blog or something like that. Get to the homepage, because that's right where the top of his latest articles. Then you can actually start going through and drilling through the many pages of different articles he has. Most of his articles are 200 words or less. But they're much bigger than that, because he's including the actual references and content to help you see, you know, why the CIA is controlling the elections through Dell computers. And he's making those types of connections. So the News Others Miss is something that you would need to really pick up on. And actually, the other thing I need to tell you is Harry is, he's there for you. He's willing to help you move your county and state towards election integrity, and he has a way of doing that. We'll talk a little bit about that after that interview. So there we got Harry covered, because it's important, because we're talking to him tomorrow. Now, what we also need to do is we need to talk about repelling an invasion in sanctuary cities. And so with that, I think that that's, you know, where we are and what we need to cover. And so before I dive in too far into anything, what I want to do is just kind of give you for the weekend look, because I can't just necessarily do this and give you the live snapshot. So I'm just giving you the weekend snapshot of where gold and silver is. Now, remember, gold was at 1814 on March 7th. It's now 1918. So it's up $100 and $104. Silver was at, was it 2007, and today it's 2430. So it's actually going up again. So in other words, a couple of weeks ago, if not last week, it was 2283. So it's gone up well over a dollar. And so, you know, that can be kind of significant when you're looking at the smaller number, but because it's not $2,000, it's $20. So $1 is a much higher percentage than $100, believe it or not. So anyway, what we want to go into next is, let me dive into this concept of how this is kind of an editorializing, but in talking to a few people, and over the weekend, we had a telecon. The last thing I did in the office was we had a telecon, and we ended up having a group that has been doing petitions for a long time. Some of you may know who the group is, but it's not important at this point. What's really important is how the group had been using them as legal arguments, and how they've had to basically play the game within the court system with these petitions. And it's interesting that, you know, they've, as long as you're willing to play, or I should say pay to play, then, you know, that's where you go. You go to the court. But the fact of the matter is, the First Amendment petition means that it cannot be abridged, that the government cannot, you know, create a poll tax, you know, to keep you from voting, that would abridge your right of voting. They cannot create a financial burden to you for you to actually have your First Amendment petition redressed. So in other words, you should be able to walk into any court. And the reality is, our existing courts are not common law courts, because truly a common law court, you should be able to walk in and make this assertion that in the First Amendment petition, how government, our government, is violating the law and what has to happen, our public servants and so forth. But technically, we don't have a judicial form of government. We do not have an oligarchy of robes who are our supreme leaders. We have a Republican form of government. Those who actually have all the control over what the laws are, how they are to be enforced, that is our representatives. This is why we've proven to you that changing of the law, changing of the court, is in the hands of the representatives. Our legislature, our state legislature, actually can change the whole makeup of your state court system. They have the power to do that. We even provided you those insights as a part of the ratification debates, because they didn't have to say, hey, this is a Republican form of government, and this is why they have all the power. I think everybody going into that room realized that this was truly a Republican form of government. If you look at Continental Congress, my argument is, and by all means, go read the Articles of Confederation. Here's a body of legislators who had all the control, what little they had. But they had the control of the judiciary. They had the, because they didn't have a judiciary. They didn't have an executive. They did it all, what little powers they had. And so under the new constitution, they granted this general government, because the Continental Congress was the general government. And it was a single-bodied general government. It didn't have bicameral. There wasn't a Senate and a House of Representatives. It was just representatives of the state. So when you and each state was equal. And so when you look at our new government formed under the Constitution, it created an executive. It created a judiciary, and it defined the few roles and responsibilities for both of those branches. But the repository of power that dictated over the judiciary, it's very clear that Congress shall regulate from time to time, you know, the dictates of the court. And it's the same thing that the president, his limitations is he can only faithfully execute the supreme laws of the land. In other words, he can't make up laws. He only can actually execute those laws that are in pursuance to the Constitution. This is a beautiful thing, friends. I'm here to tell you that our U.S. Constitution created not just, you know, a better form of governing, but it created these checks and balances and separations of power, and how each other had these duties of ensuring that they weren't crossing the line. And on top of that, the states were charged with the responsibility of keeping the entire federal government, the entire general government, into the scope of the Constitution and not allowing them to creep. And they have failed. They have failed for over 200 years. I'm serious. They have failed for over 200 years because the 1820 Missouri Compromise was over 200 years ago. And that is where Congress and the Supreme Court and all of the general government actually took privileges and advantages. And over time, because Monroe allowed it, he signed that bill. And that should never have passed. What should have happened was slavery should have been eradicated via the Constitution instead of allowing these culprits to, you know, continue to maintain this maniacal form of labor. And it, basically what it ended up doing was it drove us into the Civil War. And we actually ended slavery the only other way. Either we did it by, you know, by God's inspiration in the Constitution, by basically eliminating it through time and basically attrition, but instead we had to actually sanctify the fact that we had done these violations. And again, when it comes to religious processes, when you've violated the law, you need to sanctify yourself or, you know, make amends and what have you. So we have humbled ourselves and made amends by that Civil War. So anyhow, I just want to help you kind of understand that as we look at the courts and the petitions and everything else, in a way, the courts had made us lazy, because First Amendment petitions, it took you time to do that. You actually had to go out to your representatives. And you got to remember that when we created counties a long, long time ago, we marginalized them. We never actually instituted a proper government. But over time, as this county government started doing more and more things, you know, people go, well, you know, what do we do about that? Well, actually, what you have to do is you got to actually have a constitution that actually dictates the roles and responsibilities you want to give to that county. And then in turn, your county then needs to create a constitutional convention to actually bring forth the will of the people. Because what we did was we gave the state government very limited powers. Go read your state constitution. And then all of a sudden we started making mistakes of giving the state government more and more power when we should have been giving our county those powers, because it's so much easier to keep them in check. We meet with them in the evenings, or you go down, you know, during your lunch break and say, hey, we need to talk. This is wrong. You know, why is the road that my wife drives to work you know, in such disrepair, whatever those things are, you know. Anyway, I don't want to go down those paths. But bottom line, it also created a profession of the legal system, the lawyers and judges, that actually created a profiteering or a money-making endeavor. And they moved away from, and the state legislature never allowed them to move away. They just did it on their own. They moved away from common law and created this money-making machine, which is why the courts, you know, the court never pays. The court points to, oh, this person has to pay. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if the court is wrong, if the court's made a bad decision, then that court should pay. Not the, you know, not the taxpayers. The court should pay. Oh, wow. What a novel concept, right? I mean, they're the ones that made a bad judgment. And when they get slapped down by somebody that actually understands the law, then that judge should actually be fired. And he should actually cover whatever the financial costs are, you know, for paying back the those people who actually spent their money in the court system already. Bottom line, if we really want to start solving the problems, we have to actually talk about what the sources of the problems are. And so when we start talking about First Amendment petitions and why people, you know, are just apprehensive and actually doing the one thing that they're supposed to do. Oh, well, you know, let's just take this to court. No, we actually have to create a movement. You actually have to get out there and you have to help your fellow citizens understand we're living under tyranny. We just don't blindly trust the courts to say, oh, they're going to do a good job. Because the courts have proven over the past two centuries that they don't deserve that trust. And anybody that's honest in the court system, and I believe Todd Callender is one of those honest guys, to say, yeah, you know, the court system's rigged. And so, but that's his world. That's how he has to work, because that's what he has to do. And there's no doubt in my mind, because he's already complained about the district courts and so forth and how bad they are. So what do we do? Well, I'm telling you that, you know, we can allow Todd to continue going upstream, but that will not change. The only way we're really going to get change is we have to create the movement of people demanding, just like Martin Luther and his movement. We have to demand that our government get back in line with the Constitution and start fully complying to it, that our courts get away from becoming a money-making market for, you know, people that have a good understanding of law and Latin. You know, and we need to actually revisit Latin, and we need to start teaching Latin in school today. You know, anyway, I will leave that at that. One other thing I want to say, because I've got 1 minute, just to lay this out here. Once Congress declares that we are under an invasion, all sanctuary states, cities, all sanctuary polities, and the public servants serving within them will be standing in jeopardy for violating the Constitution, because now it is everybody's responsibility. Now that Congress is fully answering the call to doing what they're supposed to do, repel the invasion. Now everybody now has to say, okay, all of you that we invited here, we have to send you back, because we were actually skirting the law. We weren't, you know, following the law. And now that we have to follow the law, that's what we have to do. Sorry, that's what we have to do. And you know what? It doesn't matter whether people's feelings are hurt, how, you know, with the cost of the stupidity of bad government, it doesn't matter. We have to get it right. This is why I'm telling you that we have to make this a part of the campaign. This is one of those things that we have to make sure that every representative knows that this is an invasion, not an immigration crisis or a migration crisis or anything else, a humanitarian crisis. It is an invasion. They're not coming here. They're not applying to be immigrants. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. You know, it's really simple, folks. When you take an oath of office to support the Constitution, you are now bound to do just that. What these public servants should be doing that have created these sanctuary cities, they should be petitioning Congress to actually call this an invasion. They should be petitioning Congress to do what the Constitution does. Even though they're not doing that, bottom line, the jurisdiction does fall upon Congress. Now, technically, any state in the Union that is actually supporting the Constitution should be repelling. And as a matter of fact, they should and can actually call forth their militia. And I'm not talking about the National Guard. I'm talking about actually their militia to repel the invaders. If they have to get trucks or buses, or whatever means to actually deport the invaders, because that's what they're supposed to do. And then they should send the bill, the cost of all of it, to the federal government, because the federal government, by law, by the Constitution, is supposed to call forth the militia not only to execute the laws of the Union and suppress insurrections, but to repel invasions, as they guarantee in Article 4, Section 4, that all states in this Union are guaranteed a republican form of government and shall be protected from an invasion. So if Congress finally could declare this, this is why. We need to start demanding and bringing, so when we actually talk about the issues, we need to actually lay out what we believe the issues are. Do not let politicians tell you what they think the issues are, because they're only going to cherry pick what they want. And then when it comes to everything else, they plan on using political theatrics. And that is where we run amok as we the people. We have to tell them this huge punch list, this huge, list of theses, just like Martin Luther. Here are all the problems here's all the tyranny that's being waged against us. Shut these things down and get back into the scope and quit taxing us into oblivion. You don't have the authority to do these things. So therefore, just to be clear, this is why using the court system is lazy. We have the work to do. We ultimately have the responsibility. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of these subversive groups actually get people to thinking that we the people, but they're not speaking in context of we the people in context to the Constitution, which kind of goes a line with this kind of next topic that we're going to cover, because what we just saw, what just happened over the weekend, or since Friday, I think, is a response, and this is my response to the Jacksonville shooting, because here is another leftist. This is even though this really wasn't, I'll just say, a real well planned out mass murder or anything like that. There's no doubt that this was truly another leftist violating their civil responsibility as a U.S. citizen to defend and support the Constitution. See, what happens is people get indoctrinated into these really dangerous paradigms. And I'm telling you, folks, the sovereign citizen movement, the jural assemblies, all of these organizations that are penetrating the true conservatives of America and getting people to go down these paths is a very dangerous direction. And so, but I'm going to tie all of this in, because even though we happen to know that the Nazi, you know, this Nazi movement convinced this guy. Well, is the Nazi movement, you know, based on the Constitution? Not at all. As a matter of fact, Nazism is radical socialism. It's the same thing as communism. They didn't use the word communism because they didn't have to throw a revolution. They didn't have to force and have killing fields and those types of things. But it's still hardcore radical socialism where the state controls everything. And anybody that's in the paradigms or in the ilk with the Nazis or the Ku Klux Klan or any of these radical groups, as a matter of fact, let me mention a few of them, BLM, Black Panthers, La Raza, or any other form of radical demographic nationalist. When I say demographic, that means that they pick one group that they believe is superior overall, whether it be the Aryans, it doesn't matter. It bottom line means that they have abandoned, as a U.S. citizen, their responsibility in defending the Constitution. How have we gotten into this mode where we have so many people in America that have turned their backs to their citizens' responsibility and actually taken positions that are contrary, that are absolutely impossible to be able to maintain your citizenship? Oh, well, one of the reasons, folks, is because people really have convinced you that you have a right to think whatever your political views are. No. If your political views are not compatible with the Constitution, then you should not be a citizen. It's the same thing for theological radicals like Islam. Or even theologists on the Christian side. In other words, to turn America into a Christian nation only because there are other faiths that are not threatening. But you want to create a form of nationalism over a very specific demographic faith, what have you, then you are not in sync with the Constitution and our responsibility of creating a land of liberty for all. If you actually start demanding others compelling others that they comply to what you demand, then you have no business being here in America. And wherever the nation of Nazis, wherever the nation of black, you know, communism, brown communism, yellow communism, wherever, let us know. We'll deport you there on a slow boat to that destination. And you can just do what you can with everything that you're going to be allowed to take. Because, folks, the Tories, the loyalists for Britain after the Revolutionary War, 100,000 of them were deported with nothing other than the shirts on their back, the clothes they were wearing. That was it. And that became the major contention of why Britain refused to actually, you know, recognize the treaty or actually abide by it. That's why they were capturing American ships, bearing the American flag. They were impressing Americans, which was why it was a necessity in the U.S. Constitution to create this protection for Americans that were traveling abroad. No state was going to have nearly the same clout as the federal government. This is why the Constitution, this is why the framers during the Constitutional Convention, basically they didn't abdicate, they ensured that power was delegated to be the best protection for U.S. citizens against foreign nations. So they actually created the U.S. citizen. Contrary to what you hear from the radical sovereign citizen movement, that you are chattel because you're a citizen, that is incorrect, and they have no support on that. There is nowhere in any of the constitutional debates of the Constitution or even the 14th Amendment or any of the amendments that have been ratified. Not one of them has ever brought forth a paradigm that you are chattel, that you are subjected and subjects to this federal government. That the federal government is, as it was defined by the framers, limited and defined, and it was created in the service of the states and the people. They're the chattel. They're the ones that are subject to us and the supreme law that we foreordained, or basically we ratified. I'll just say that. I think it was foreordained by God. So to be clear, as we look at, you know, these radical ideologies, we really need to start, you know, clarifying, and we need to start moving forward. And as a matter of fact, we need to have these conversations where the sheriff and our county commissioners start hearing this, because it needs to be a part of the paradigm shift. Anybody, if you're a member of the BLM, then that person is suspect and their citizenship should be suspect. That's how clear it should be. If you're in government and you're an enforcer and you're basically saying these people have a right, they have a right to be out there and they have a right to vote and have political power in America when they are actually antithetical to the Constitution, that is antithetical to a citizen. And we need to actually start taking away the citizenship at a minimum. Convert people to be inhabitants. And oh, by the way, your protection under the Constitution, like due process, sorry, we don't have to give you due process. And as a matter of fact, if you end up going into a court because you violate a traffic law, if you violate any of the laws that are legitimate laws, then sorry, you're going to get deported. We're not going to spend a bunch of time throwing you in jail. You're going to have to fend for yourself as an inhabitant without any rights, because that's what you are. You're an inhabitant in America without rights. Now, the framers may have been a little bit more, I'll just say, appeasing to inhabitants, but we actually have to go down this path of just like what they had to do with the Tories. You know, when desperate measures are called, we have way too many people that are enemies to America. It's not over 50%, folks, but the numbers are staggering. And just like what ended up happening, when you look at, you know, how much was it? What was it? Maybe 6 million people in America and 100,000 were kicked out. I mean, that's a significant percentage, right? It's more than 1%. Right? It's more than 10%. So it's a good percentage. And we're above that now because of our education system. Our education system has absolutely failed our children to becoming U.S. citizens. They've actually radicalized them, and they have actually weaponized them as a part of the Bolshevik Revolution. And so we need to actually look at our education system and start arresting educators that are doing this. They have a responsibility as educators to prepare our children to become contributors to our society, not to convert our society into a radical left-wing paradigm. So when you listen to, you know, anybody that's talking, I don't care if it's the progressives or the progressive FBI, they're wrong in associating and making this akin to a constitutionalist. A constitutionalist doesn't get tripped up in these facades, in, you know, this labeling game. Because bottom line, when they use the word hate crime, they're just basically saying that this is just a wrong feeling. No. We need to understand the difference between hate crimes because a hate crime is actually an ideological crime. And that's where we need to clear this whole debate up. This concept of a hate crime, you know, just because I dislike you doesn't mean I'm an ideological radical. Because you do things that are absolutely repugnant, because you do things that are absolutely, you know, just things that I find disdain in, doesn't mean that, you know, because I hate you or because I'm willing to defend myself, that that's a hate crime. And when I say defend, I won't throw the first blow. But if I have anything to say about it, I'll throw the last ball. And that's how we all should be looking. You know, the best defense is a good offense. And it, when people say, well, just because you hate this person. No, that's, we cannot accept that as a crime. It's an ideological crime. You are wired in thinking that you need to have a form of government that is incompatible with our constitutional republican form of government. So what we need to do is we need to go after those who are providing disinformation, because they're the ones that are guilty, or they're the ones that are creating the radical groups and radical people, which means your education system is creating these things like BLM, La Raza, and even the radical Native American movements. This is all disinformation. And they are deliberately dividing us. Now, on top of that, one of the things I brought to the forefront on the Friday call was the fact that there are plenty of dividers out there. Our education system is one of them. Southern Poverty Law Center is another, because they use disinformation regarding individuals and so forth, because they want to use, you know, anybody that's for the Constitution, is they're just basically going to come out and call you a radical. And so as we really look at, you know, all of the different radicals out there, we're going to need to create a page of dividers. And what I want to do is I actually want to start listing all of the different organizations that are being divisive. In other words, if you're not teaching the true Constitution and supporting the true Constitution, in other words, you're not advocating for First Amendment petitions and working with those groups that we're working with that are calling for First Amendment petitions and need more, and you're not helping, you know, in the submission, the creation of First Amendment petitions and the collection and so forth, if you're not involved in uniting on that one fundamental constitutional principle, then as far as I'm concerned, you're a divider. Tactical Civics is a divider. John Birch Society, divider. All of these groups that say, no, 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 this is what we're going to do, and this is all we're going to do. And so I'm here to tell you, Constitutional Alliance, divider. Until people actually start stepping up and they say, you know what, we actually are a part of this and we want to make sure that as subject matter experts, because, you know, there are these groups that are subject matter experts, Second Amendments or what have you. But if they're not willing to submit and actually give us better First Amendment petitions that we can create in a repository, they're one of the biggest contributors to the problem, because they're out there with their little bully pulpit saying this is the number one issue. This is the one thing that we must stop. And I'm telling you, the one thing we must stop is all of this noncompliance to the Constitution, period. Anybody that says one particular, you know, noncompliance like face recognition, like the Constitutional Alliance, this is the number one problem, and if we don't fix this, we're all gone. I'm telling you, that will not fix the problem. It will not fix the problem. It fixes a problem, but it does not fix the overall problem. It will not bring us into full compliance, nor is it intended to bring us into full compliance. It only stops their evil plot from doing those things. But look at the tyranny we were living under before they even went down to biometrics and facial recognition and all this other crap. We've been living under tyranny for two centuries. And so it doesn't matter what little group you want to call, what little expertise you want to say is the expert. I'm sorry. You know, you may be really smart on your one myopic issue, and you may be leading in that issue, but you are a part of the problem because you're turning your back on the entire Constitution over your one little issue that you want to focus, like the Second Amendment, like medical freedom, whatever. Any of these myopic issues, and you folks, you're smart enough to start recognizing this. So you need to actually start taking the stand or taking a stand and standing up against these people and saying, you know what, you're really a part of the problem because you're being divisive. Well, how are we being divisive? And it's that simple, folks, because you're turning your back on the rest of the Constitution by not demanding full compliance of the Constitution. You only care about compliance of the Second Amendment. Well, it's the most important. No, it's not. The most important part of the Constitution is Article 7, because Article 7 identifies what the Constitution is. It is a compact, and it identifies who the parties are to it, the states. And so we actually have to get the states to start doing their job. And we, the people, have failed to getting our counties and our states in line. So ultimately, the fault, it lies on our laps. It is on our back. It is something that we must do. So I've been saying this. I'm going to create a page over the dividers. And I'm going to be doing this. Now, one of the things that I really wanted to drill into even more specifically is regarding the Sovereign Citizens Movement, because I'm going to start haranguing them. I am going to start calling the Anna Von Ritzes and all of these other different groups out there that are getting you and trying to convince you to surrender your citizenship as one of the most evil groups possible. Because why? This is how they are really destroying the ranks of those who could actually be effective in fighting against the federal tyranny that we're facing. Here we've got a bunch of conservatives that are overwhelmed by the tyranny. They don't know what to do, and they're lying to them, providing them disinformation. I mean, come on. You know, you hear all these clips like, oh, well, you know, we have... We've been paying, like, the under the U.S. Constitution, we have been paying Britain, our taxes, like we're part of their Commonwealth. There's absolutely zero evidence that has even happened. As a matter of fact, I've looked through the finances. We have not been paying the crown anything until the Organic Acts of 1871. So 1871 is when the tables turned, when Britain had used enough money to basically corrupt our Congress in getting them to do things that were illegitimate. Because bottom line, they were afraid that we would have to go to war with Britain and possibly lose, because we were already trying to pull our butts up with our bootstraps. And I'm telling you, these fools didn't know what they were doing. In 1871, we still could have defended ourselves against Britain. We should have actually pushed back and said, there you go. But instead of actually fighting a war, and as a matter of fact, you know, maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe my analysis is a little bit tainted, because maybe this is why Britain did what they did, because they knew that money would corrupt, and that's what they did. They bought off enough congressmen to get rid of the radical, to unseat enough of the radical Republicans to do their dirty deeds. And our government from that point forward has been a corrupt government, and they've basically turned our government into the operations of a crime syndicate. Not that this is all legitimate. Just because the federal government has assumed some unconstitutional power, role, responsibility, or what have you, or property even, does not make what they did legitimate. Just because they're doing these things and these, you know, some of these committees of safety out there, because I know that there's committees of safety out there. There are ones that are trying to do the right thing, but I know there are committees of safety out there that have been misled, that are actually calling the overall government illegitimate, the Constitution illegitimate. They're taking the same argument. as the sovereign citizens. They're just not going down the path of becoming a sovereign citizen. They think they're on the high ground, and they're not. The Constitution has never been the problem. It has been the public servants who have actually colluded and corroborated through corruption to do things that are unconstitutional. The states must delegate everything to the federal government, period. If it has not been delegated, what they're doing is unconstitutional, and they're committing a crime. It's that simple, folks. It's that simple. So with 3 minutes left, literally, the other thing I really need to just pound. Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy are not eligible. I probably got his name wrong. Are not eligible to serve as president or vice president, period. Just like Kamala Harris, Kamala Harris. And so when these names come up in the Republican forum, why is it that the Republican Party is not telling you this? Why is the RNC not standing up and saying, these guys can't be on our stage? Folks, this is more evidence that the RNC has turned on our Constitution completely. They've turned against it a long time ago, but now they're being blatant. Go look up the original Natural Citizen and Naturalized Citizen Act of 1790. I have it on my Facebook page. I'll need to put this, actually, I'm going to download this so that we can actually put this on our page so that everybody understands. If both your parents are not citizens of the United States, and you're born in the United States, you are not a natural-born citizen. In other words, if your parents decide to naturalize, that child needs to be naturalized along with them. The fact that the Supreme Court tried to redefine something that Congress in 1790 actually defined, I'm sorry, they don't have the authority to do that. They don't have the authority to redefine something that was clearly established by law. They cannot trump the framers and how they defined what these things mean in the Constitution. When it's been done, it is unjusticable. I believe that is the term, unjusticable, whatever. Anyway. There's a lot of other things to probably cover. I know that people are really, trying to figure out what to do. Folks, you need to get involved with First Amendment petitions. You need to actually start working, if it's within the party, within some good constitutional grassroots organization. I think the Oath Keepers were a pretty decent organization. They may be myopic, but I don't know. I've never talked to the founders. I've never talked to the true leadership. I've talked to the leadership of the John Birch Society, and they've already drawn their line, and they've been, I'll be honest, at least they've been forthright that they don't play with anybody. You either join the John Birch Society and do what they believe is what needs to be done, or not. And so this is what you have to do. You have to quit, and you have to tell people that if they're members of the John Birch Society, then they're a member of a divisive organization, an organization that can and actually should be defined as a controlled opposition, along with tactical civics, along with all of these other groups out there that will not unite on and become a part of the petition militia. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.